last of the group here. My name's Laura Anderko. I am a professor and an endowed chair at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. I am also director, there's some cards going around, of the Mid-Atlantic Center for Children's Health and the Environment. It's a CDC-funded center, and why that's important is because the video series I will be talking about for three contact hours of continuing education can be found on that website. So I'd also like to thank Katie Huffling, who is the program director of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, and my son, who is a communication specialist who helped in this project. I personally don't have any conflicts, but the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments did get funding to produce this video series that I'll be talking about. So what is health in all policies? Good question on the very last day of a very long conference. It's a collaborative approach to improving the health of all people by incorporating health considerations into decision making across sectors and policy arenas. And so public health nurses are really good at that, right? So we know about healthy homes, we talk about transportation, food deserts, all of those things where we need to reach out to unusual and unlikely partners. And I think the speakers before me have done a really great job and have been successful because of that reaching out. And when we talk about health in all policies, the outcomes are intended to promote health, promote equity, and promote sustainability. They're intended to support intersectoral collaboration. They're intended to benefit multiple partners. They're intended to engage stakeholders. And they're intended to create structural or procedural change. Again, we've heard a lot about that this morning. So my question is, and my project is really talking about clean power. And so I would propose that we stretch our thoughts a bit more, and Lisa did a great job about talking about fracking and water, that we also extended to think about clean energy. And what does clean energy and clean power have to do with health? Well, the photograph on the left shows just a typical plant spewing out carbon pollution, clearly polluting the air, but also what it is doing is creating climate change. So carbon is the primary greenhouse gas, along with methane and nitrous oxide. We need to begin to think about alternative energy and clean power to clean up the air and to hopefully slow down our climate changes. So, as we know, there's 3 million plus nurses in the United States. We are on the front lines in every place imaginable, schools and hospitals and health departments and communities. And we are addressing the impacts of climate change every single day. So whether it's looking at extreme weather, increased allergens and asthma rates, we're continuing to see a broadening of our vector ranges, so mosquitoes are being found carrying malaria in places we've never seen before, and as one example, ticks and Lyme disease. And we're also experiencing the resultant strain on our healthcare infrastructure and our public health infrastructure. So this slide really helps us focus on those health impacts that we know right now is being caused by climate change. And I've given full hour lectures on this, so you're going to just get a very brief summary of some of the things that are evidence-based and that we may be seeing in our practices as public health nurses. So if you go to the right at about 1 o'clock, we see, does anybody know what that is? That's Lyme disease. Okay, and so if you're living in the Northeast, particularly in the state of Maine, you're seeing epidemic proportions of Lyme disease. Just below that is in the city of Chicago, elderly fellow suffering from extreme heat. In fact, there were over 200 people that died several years ago now in a massive heat wave. City was not prepared. They actually had to put bodies of people in refrigerators that were in Grant Park for the Taste of Chicago because they were that unprepared for the level of heat and the amount of people that died as a result of it. Many of these people were elderly, poor, did not have air conditioning, turned on their fans, and literally cooked themselves to death. The city did bounce back and did have a community outreach program, which worked, but as time has gone on, it's been defunded and they don't have the level of community outreach that they had shortly after the tragedy. Right below that is, anybody know what plant that is? Poison ivy. I was actually interviewed by the Post a few years ago because the writer, the reporter's son kept getting hospitalized seriously with poison ivy. They weren't sure where he was getting exposed and found out that his dog was running through the fields and sleeping in bed with him, which had been happening. But because of climate change, certain plants like ragweed and poison ivy, they love the carbon dioxide excess and they love the heat. And so they're like super plants. And so the oils in the plant were actually much more potent than what we would typically see. And so this little guy had been hospitalized several times till they figured it out. Right next to the plant, we see a fellow clutching his chest. I've been doing a lot of research in the area of air quality, not only the pollution, ozone, but also pollen, humidity, and heat. And what we're finding is extreme increases, particularly for kids, particularly in the inner city, particularly African-American kids, who are experiencing myocardial infarctions as well as asthma attacks. And then as we move to the left, we see wildfires. Those of us living in the West have seen nothing like it ever. Coupled with drought, and as we know, that wildfire they will not only take away life and livelihood and homes, but also create huge pollution problems. My son lives in Washington State, in Bellingham, and they were feeling the smog and smelling the smoke from hundreds of miles away. Above that is flooding. We continue to see hurricanes at very strong forces that we have not seen before, resulting in devastation, but also mold and other issues associated with flooding. Above that is the friendly mosquito. We're seeing more and more infestation. Predictions that the Anopheles mosquito that carries malaria can be found as far west as Montana, and predictions that this is going to continue to spread as the conditions warm and we have conditions that support mosquitoes. Right next to that is ragweed. If any of you have never had allergies and suddenly developed it, it's probably thanks to the friendly ragweed. They not only continue to pollinate, but the pollen is much stronger than in the past. And so we're beginning to see more people who are prone to allergies and asthma. And again, on the very top, seeing many more kids with asthma and allergies than we have in the past, particularly kids living in urban environments. So the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, I used to be president of the board. I now am co-chair of the research work group. The Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments is the only national group dedicated to the environmental health movement and nurses. We focus on education, we focus on research, we focus on practice, and we focus on policy. We have monthly calls, and they're free, and you meet great people like Lisa, and we work towards very important goals. As part of the Alliance mission, Katie asked me to work with her on creating a campaign for advocacy around clean power. I actually was thrilled a few years ago now. I was awarded an honor by the White House for my work in advocacy around clean power and carbon pollution. And so we got to work developing a series of web-based media modules. They're about 2 to 3 minutes long. There's three of them, so you're counting maybe 10 minutes total. That has a companion workbook. And you click on the link, you listen to it, you look at the workbook, you fill out your post-test, you're done. You get 3 hours of continuing education units. It was designed specifically for public health nurses who are interested in learning about the science of climate change, public health impacts, and how nurses could effectively advocate for the Clean Air Act and clean energy policies. So, briefly, how has the Clean Air Act improved health? And you know, the Clean Power Plan that the president is marketing these days really comes out of the Clean Air Act. In 2010, approximately $1.3 trillion was gained in public health and environmental health benefits at a much lower cost. It reduced pollution, led to less illness, less days lost to work, school, and less disability and deaths, and reduced hospitalizations. So anytime somebody says the EPA is a job killer, I would just say, look at the data. We're actually keeping people healthy when we enact laws such as the Clean Air Act, and ultimately helps the public health. So the Clean Power Plan really ultimately looks at cutting carbon pollution from power plants by 30% by the year 2030. I actually was at the signing by Gina McCarthy, which was awesome, and also when President Obama unrolled the Clean Power Plan at Georgetown. If you want to learn more, there's the web link below, but in a nutshell, carbon has never been regulated, ever. And this is the first time that we're looking at regulating carbon pollution, which we know not only dirties the air, but creates a number of public health issues. Every state has an opportunity for a sort of a menu of selecting how they want to achieve this carbon pollution reduction, either through alternative energy, cleaning up some of the power plants that they have, and they worked very intimately with states to be sure that everybody felt like they had a voice and an opportunity. I live in Virginia. They're big into nuclear power, and that was something that was a deal breaker for Virginia, so that's in there. Whether you agree with it or not, they really worked hard at finding consensus. So what are we anticipating by 2030 with the Clean Power Plan? Avoiding up to 3,600 fewer premature deaths per year, 90,000 fewer asthma attacks in children, 1,700 fewer hospital admissions, and avoiding 300,000 missed days of school and work. And these are very, very conservative estimates. So, for those that really want more information, I have a few flyers with the specific web link from the ANI site. So you can find it on the site, on the business card I gave you, or on the ANI site, the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. This is a copy of the cover of the workbook. It's chock full with all sorts of information around climate change and health. I was not as brave as the last presenter. I did not embed this into my PowerPoint, but was bold enough to take a screenshot. The first module talks about the origins of the Clean Air Act, and it's actually a narrative. So there is somebody who talks about Denora, Pennsylvania, how many people died, the beginnings of the Clean Air Act, why it was important. And so it really goes quite quickly. It's not a PowerPoint presentation at all. Oops.
It's going to do it.
It's going to do it. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I don't know if I have time, but okay.
I was lucky to be born on the first day the smog hit Denora in October 1948. 5 days later, they had to set up an emergency hospital. It's still hard to say whether I actually met my father or not. He was there when I was born. Five days later, he was in the basement. converted into a horror. No one talked about it when I was in elementary school. When I was in high school, Congress passed the Clean Air Act. When I enrolled in nursing school, the Clean Air Act wasn't just about studying the dangers of air pollution anymore. The Clean Air Act in 1970 changed Denora. The zinc plant, which refused to shut down in 1948, was regulated. Instead of shame and silence, Denorans can talk about what has happened and what's happening. It's 1973. Red eyes that I saw this morning are clearing up. I haven't treated anyone with shortness of breath this week. No one called in sick to work this week. This means I get to spend the holidays with my son. My son and his father.
Awesome. Thank you. Whoever did that. Because I did not. Technology is not my thing. All right. So I don't know how to get back to where I was. Just. Oh, here it is. Thanks. So, great. So you already been through the first module. You're 33% there. If you go to the Annie website, which is envrn.org, you will click on CE, and then it'll take you here and talk you through it. It's actually pretty easy. So, health and all policies. So, clean power is about health. It's really important at this point where we're at politically with an upcoming election and a lot of flailing about the Clean Power Plan is to really support it, understand it. There's lots of information that is very easy to read so that you can articulate that and advocate in your own hometown. It is all about health. Thank you.
Carbon and all the greenhouse gases, people start saying, wow, So if we do alternative energy and we do solution, then we're going to have less people with asthma.
Yeah.
But you have to leave them there, and it has to be pretty simple, right? Because people kind of glaze over after a while. That's a great question, because there are, there are a lot of folks who just, even if the facts are staring them in the face, they don't want to believe it, right?
Well, and I've been to public comment on fracking, and the people representing the industry counter with all these data. They say, we've been doing this in Michigan for years and years and years.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, that's
too.
Problem.
I've been doing it for years.
Yeah. So thank you.
You have to be ready for counter. It happens all the time, whether it's chemicals or whatever. You have to be ready because they always play the same game. You have flip presentations and you throw out data and you have to bring it back and say, okay, well, what they're really saying is that.
So how do you link that to people whose sole reason for opposing the Clean Air Act or whatever it is you're trying to do is because they don't want any more government regulation of anything?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the framework that we're typically dealing with. They don't care what it is.
Right.
They don't want the government regulation.
Right.
To be free enterprise.
If you ask people, do they know how bad it is in China, right, Beijing, and people are walking around with that, there's no regulation there. So I remember growing up before the Clean Air Act, I grew up in Chicago, I remember breathing in all the air. I think that telling stories I never used the word regulation in a unfriendly group. I use the word standards, I use the word cleaning up the air or whatever it is that I'm talking about. Because there are hot topic words, right? Hot button words. And you don't want to use regulation. It's really protecting the public, and
right.
I just keep using those words,
mm-hmm.
taking a positive spin on it.
Right. That's what I enjoy. I always say, you know what? Everybody's glad to have jobs, but we need to be protecting the public's health.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here to talk about, I'm in Texas.
Right. Well, and the reality is there are a lot of jobs in clean energy, a lot. And there's lots of examples and lots of data on it. So you have to really understand who it is that you're helping to persuade and inform. And sometimes, it takes a little bit. It's not just the first time. You have to kind of keep hitting it over and over.
I agree with that. It's persistence and bringing the same message, and the more people saying the same message really helps build that consensus.
That's why nurses are so important.
They're
everywhere.
They trust them.
Yes, they do.
Totally. So all you have to do is say, I'm really concerned about health and taxes. This is why. Oh, nurses say it. Don't be sure.
I'm Lisa Kapp. Anyway, just I'm wondering about this is interesting on policy and very important, but also the individual responsibility in terms of consumer action and choice and informed choice. And I guess part of this comes back to, and I don't think I employ this very well all the time, but my father was a petroleum geologist, so I grew up hearing combined trip. This is a long time ago. And cut back, drill the lights when you leave the room, all the things about energy conservation. Just and then also in reading, some people are promoting, maybe the McDonald's toys that fill up the landfills and all the things that we do as consumers with plastics. I mean, I think there's a huge, as a holistic approach, I'm wondering, how do we advocate for that?
I think just by modeling good behavior, and also recognizing nobody's perfect. I mean, I had to take a plane to get here. I'd still be in the car if I drove.
Right.
there are some things that, but I've driven a hybrid for a long, long time, and, I grew up during the Carter administration.
That was the cool thing.
We're paying the price for not doing anything about it back in the car.
Carter administration, quite frankly, and you know, just decades and decades of ignoring the problem.
My name is Alina Grossman. I'm here in Chicago. I'm not a nurse, but I'm working on a climate change and public health project. And one, I want to echo the importance of using nurses. We're actually developing a general public video, and we have a nurse from UIC who is explaining the connection, so they're trusted. And I will echo several of the comments of going to challenging environments and talking about it. I've traveled throughout Southern Illinois. And a couple things that I have found, it's not necessarily about clean energy, but trying to find a common ground, with, even though you might differ on something, but what's the end goal that you're looking for? And if it's emergency preparedness, it's you want the community prepared. If it's health, you both want asthma morbidity mortality to reduce. So kind of trying to find that common ground without avoiding or without engaging in conflict.
Yeah.
But I have a question. I'm so excited about hearing about the modules, and I'm really excited.
Oh,
good. Yeah, because we've been talking about
and they're free.
I know. So my question was, I've had a couple people from community colleges around Chicago, even from UIC College of Nursing. We've had these beginning discussions of, you know, what about trying to incorporate climate change into the nursing curricula? And I was just wondering if there are examples of that that I could be guided to take a look at and share.
Yeah. So the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments has a whole work group on education. We're finishing up an online, free online book.
Okay.
Stephanie Chaluka and I wrote a full chapter on climate change with all sorts of activities in it. There's, you know, I've done guest lectures for a number of courses, including nursing on climate change. So the nice thing about the Alliance is we're all about sharing. Syllabi and, you know, resources and all of that, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So you can reach me at that email address on that card, and I can connect you.
Like 18 to 22 year olds. So having them appreciate health policy, you know, like that, it's a challenge. So I really do think if you look at Michelson's TBL strategies, team-based learning, that's what we utilize in this summit. And it did, it's a really structured thing, and we're really incorporating it more and more in some of our classes and coursework in general at James Madison University at the undergraduate level, because it has the student has to prepare before the session, and then it's an individual readiness test and then a group readiness test. The individual readiness test talks about, or it brings up issues they should have read and prepared for. But then the group tests they do together, so there's discussion and further learning. So we spent about 30 minutes on that, Maria, before we went into the actual Mind the Gap session. And then that background in the Medicaid expansion, for example, or whatever the topic is, we built on that to then prepare them to answer that Mind the Gap exercise. So whether it's in class or in a summit like we did, which was interprofessional, I think it's very replicable anywhere. And integrating health policy within, so we took like we have a health policy component in our leadership course, and then we, this year, are incorporating it in our public health, our population-based health course. And those groups are coming together to do this as part of their coursework. So it's this summit links back to the grades in their courses in just a preparation for the summit. But once they get there and engage, they're having fun.
It was really fun. It, the whole thing, you know, the on stage part takes off 4 hours. So it's napping late in the semester and associated with the grades, they have to be there. I was a total skeptic. I thought,
I know. It was
about how to fund the gap or whatever, but they are a total convert.
And they had their laptops, so they were investigating and everything online anymore. So they're like coming up with these solutions that we hadn't, you know, we were like, wow, that makes fun.
Yeah. Did any group come up with the idea of single payer? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Yay.
they went away from the Medicaid language, but they came up with single payer and different foundation things and some schools.
Prison-funded events, charitably-funded approaches.
Yeah.
And then the gallery block included them voting on the, so they elected the top three to be, and then they had, you know, 10 minutes to put a presentation together for the legislators.
And so this year we went from 82 students to 276, and we're bringing in another discipline, and we are actually going to have at least 4 legislators there, I think, that have agreed that they're coming this time instead of 2.
And the legislators, actually, when you were giving your talk, Melanie, I thought they were so good to the students.
They were
really busy people, and they had to travel. Richmond is far away, and they came, and they were so respectful of the students. That, you know, for me, getting here is a marketing opportunity, a basic opportunity, and so it was a win on both sides. Students got a voice, they were high participants, and these guys came because they're cultivating the next generation of voters.
They were conservative legislators.
Yeah. They were
even polite and respectful about the weed, which was one of the top three.
It was
very, very well done. Yeah, I like that.
So it's definitely, you can replicate it. It was fun. It's a lot of work to prepare for it. But when you're in the session, it's just when it's
great. The academic stuff has to line up too, which is our biggest problem in our professional education. Nobody gets credit outside of your own discipline because they don't know where, but if you can get like-minded faculty in other departments who are coincidentally teaching a course where they can inject some health policy information, it's not a health policy course. That's why we lost business college, because it is in spring or in winter, the inhaling capacity for so the institution has to line up. So there's a lot of
I am the best job in the world because I get to do public policy and clean air, and I get to talk to politicians and try to convince them to do the right thing. Or the Respiratory Health Association, which is a small governmental charity here in Chicago. And another word that works really well in convincing people who aren't necessarily on your side from the minute they see you is safeguards. You are not talking about regulations, you're talking about safeguards. It's a great word to use. We're on the ground going to Springfield, our state capital, and you know, talking to folks to convince them to restrict tobacco use or to support clean energy policies. And we hooked up with one of our board members who's a professor of nursing at Rush University, and she has without fail brought about 20 nursing students every year to our lung health advocacy day in Springfield. They are incredibly effective messages, and they're incredibly motivated, and it's also a great experience for them to realize, how that aspect of policy that determines who sees them actually happens. So again, thank you for doing all this. And we're working on clean energy policies here in Illinois, and if anybody has mobile and is interested in learning more, I'd be happy to Yeah.